from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
All right, what is going on, Bay Area? D'Anthony Volpe, a.k.a. Dan DeVone, back in the saddle with you. This is Saturdays. My name is Evan Giddings, Carter Chickering behind the glass. We are rolling, we are rocking, we are live and local from 9 to noon. Glad to see you again, Dan. It's been a week. What's going on, brother?
I'm glad that you could join us as you and Stuart Hall Carter just pour into these studios after a couple of libations last night. But what's going on? It's good to see that team unity. We're always trying to character build here at 95.7 The Game. You don't just hang out doing shows. I want you guys to be together, juntos, on and off the field, as apparently you were last night.
Well, apparently we all weren't, because you didn't come out to the softball game last Friday. We were looking for it. You were talking about how you're the best player on the field. Put him at shortstop. I was in center with a first baseman's mitt or a softball catcher's glove. One of the two. I can't remember. I was making plays looking for you. I was texting you. And then, Carter, I hear that Dan is actually sitting, was it ringside of Game 6 of the New York Rangers, banging the glass? Where were you?
So I got to be honest with you. I completely misread that. They were in Florida for Game 6.
Oh, my goodness.
So I
so
wanted
you
to
flew
go
to Florida?
No. I was in New York, but I wanted to scalp tickets. And I'm like, okay, I'm going out to the game tonight. I'll just pick up some tickets, pay way over market value. But apparently that wasn't going to happen, because it all ended out in Florida in Sunrise Stadium. Oh, the Rangers, man. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the McDonald's story, or there's a 30 for 30 that I just suggest everybody watch about the New York Rangers and the 1994 team, which is the last time they won a Stanley Cup. Now, it's not just relegated to New York and New York sports. It's one of those feel goods. And I'm not a sappy, pour sugar on it sort of, I want to cry. But this is one of those, it's one of those things where you can actually play the piano music in the background, and it tugs at the heartstrings. 30 for 30, forget the name of it. So New York Rangers has to do with that 1994 championship.
I'll have to go check it out. Well, Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Finals right now, right?
Florida and Edmonton.
Yeah. That's right.
So an opportunity for everybody to see McDavid do his thing on the national
exactly.
stage.
Exactly. Connor's a big boy. Who, by the way, was an alum of a place that I worked in, Erie, Pennsylvania. He was a part of, the ECHL for Edmonton's minor league team. So I actually got to see him. I think he was before he blew up, he came and played a couple of warm-up games before he got to the NHL. It was pretty incredible. The guy is ridiculous. But that is Dan DeVone. My name is Evan Giddings, Carter Chickering. Shout out to our YouTube chat filing in, also on Twitch, all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. 888-957-9570.
Is that Carter's last name?
The Xfinity Mobile text line. What?
Is that Carter's last name?
Yeah, Chickering.
It doesn't fit.
What are you talking about?
Dude, 683 bills. Chickering? It should be.
I was going to give you a 6-7, Carter.
Should I change it?
I mean, it should be Blutarski or something. It's got to be.
Speaking of hockey, we got an enforcer behind the glass tonight. So everybody, be careful out there as you're rolling around, getting your Saturday set. Carter and I were out at the A's game yesterday, Dan. That's where we were team building. So I had a chance to see JJ Bleday's walk off bomb.
Nice.
A little hazy at this point, but I do remember jubilation from the crowd.
All right,
that I do remember. There's energy.
Is that what you want to call it?
At the Coliseum,
a gathering.
Hey, easy. There was 15K last night. That for the Coliseum is wow. I got to tell you, that is quite a turnout. There was also a turnout in Texas where the Giants went down and beat Bruce Bochy's Texas Rangers in game one of that series. Gets on long later today at, I think, 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific Standard. You got Spencer Howard on the bump, Andrew Heaney, but they get the win last night behind Logan Webb, and they beat their old boy Boch.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun last night. Although, I don't know how many people still are familiar with Boch from the organization back in the day. I think everybody's, we've changed face a couple of times. Maybe it was the announcers, the only people that really had any sort of relationship with Boch. But
I think Austin Slater might be the only player on the team that played.
He's
that
back
played for
in
Bruce
center
Bochy.
Field today, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Yeah, he wasn't playing last night.
Yeah.
But we can get into that too.
Yeah. I just got to get the early shout out. Let Jimmy Jacket. I, for whatever reason, the last couple of weeks, I've been ignoring the 5-0.
You've been slacking,
we'll
Dan.
Get to him early. But yeah, I don't know. Is that a good place to start? Where are you at? We haven't talked since Luis Matos got sat down. You talk about, you know, player of the week, and then 2 weeks later, pack your bags and head back down to Sack of Tomatoes.
Well, first things first, because we didn't have a chance to chat last weekend, I do have to apologize to you. I don't do this often, and it does tug at my heartstrings a little bit.
You don't do it often? We're going to change your name to You're Right Dan.
No.
Basically what this is going to be.
You're Right
Dan, and 100% is what they ought to call me. Go ahead.
Dan Almost DeVone, because, and I got to give you love, because I came down Anthony Volpe's road a couple weeks ago, not knowing, not having watched much. I was talking out of my keister. The guy had the biggest hit, in my opinion, of that 4-run ninth inning against Camilo Duvall last Sunday in the finale of the sweep against the New York Yankees. So I got to give it up to your boy. Little Anthony Volpe was very nice and has continued to play extremely well this weekend. Something that the Giants are still looking for from their shortstop. It doesn't matter if it's been Schmidt, Luciano, Wisely, and now the latest guy in the ire, kind of in the bullseye of those young, I don't know, up back and forth players is Luis Matos. I mean, it doesn't feel like I think the Giants are not as bad as they played during their, say, 6-game losing streak. I'm also not sure they were as good as people were hoisting them up into when they went, I don't know, 11-13 or 11-3 out of 14 games.
Yeah, and so what does that make them? It's a 500 team.
Which is, well, right now they're 2 games below 500, but yeah.
Right, hovering right around meh.
Wild card team, Dan.
Well, it's sort of, well, yeah, this year because the National League is so weak, but that's basically who they are. They're very, it's been a lot more feast or famine this year. You know, they're so bad, and then, of course, they lose 6, and then they go on that road trip where they were in Pittsburgh and New York and come back and take 2 of 3 of Philadelphia, and you're back on that bandwagon. But at the end of the day, it's pretty much you're looking at 81 up and 81 down, much like that of a year ago. It's beginning to smell a lot like 500. Now, I personally believe that this is a team that still has, I think, another gear that they can put things into. I still believe in sort of that younger core. The big question now has become, what sort of evolved since the last time we spoke, and is that I think the pitching has become the Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. And namely, that starting pitching was a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Webb was fantastic last night, but you're right.
Would you get past him?
Yeah, I mean, the starting pitching outside of him, you know, Jordan Hicks, I think, is finally starting to come back down to earth as a guy who's never started before in the show. He was a starting pitcher in the Cardinals system, but is a guy that's now finally getting stretched out and has not even, I believe, gone past 5 more than once or twice this season anyway. So he was never somebody that's going to eat a ton of innings. You're running into injuries right and left, both in the position player as well as pitching category. So, you know, I think the Giants at the beginning of this week, Dan, had 13 on the IL, which was most in the major leagues, which does make it difficult to evaluate this team. But that's why, in a way, if this group can hover around 500, I do see that as somewhat of a minor win. The thing about the young kids, and it's interesting because I heard a lot about wanting to empower the youth. And we've heard that for the Golden State Warriors. We've heard it a little bit for the Niners in regards to their quarterback position. But with the Giants, I know that everyone is clamoring for these kids. And I would like to see more of them, too. I think Helly Ramos is here to stay for sure. Matos needs some work, but I'd like to see it done in the show. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. The direction that I get from the front office is that the veterans are going to determine the path of their season, and the front office is going to do everything in their power to give the reins to veteran players. That means that I think we're going to be pissed off a lot this season as fans watching these young guys not be allowed to struggle. Like, the first thing that popped into my mind, Dan, when I saw Luis Matos get optioned down to AAA was he's Moses Moody. Like he's Moses Moody. If he has one bad game or one bad stretch, he's just going to get sent back to the bench. It doesn't matter what he does. He could score 20 points. He could go 3 for 4. He won NL Player of the Week, for crying out loud, the same week that Aaron Judge won it on the American League side. He went from that player back to playing in Sacramento. That, to me, dictates a direction from the front office that the young players are nice pieces, but they are not the focal point. Or this team is not built for them to be the focal point.
Well, I think what you read into that, or what does that say, it's that you're seeing the sort of pressure that I think Farhan is under. That I think if Farhan was in his first or second year, maybe, you know, you give the kids an opportunity. I think with Farhan and the front office are telling you that I don't have that luxury anymore, that I've got to win today, that there is a bullseye on my back. I recognize that. Call it the hot seat, call it whatever it is that you want. But I think you're seeing the pressure of him needing to produce victories today rather than tomorrow. He's not looking to build for the future. His future is right now, simply because he's on the, what, year 6 of this project. So I think it's a blatant way of Farhan saying, yeah, I'm feeling the pressure. I got no time for kids to make mistakes at this level. In the case of Luis Matos, I would say that it's clear that this guy needs one thing to work on, and that is his approach at the plate. He's offering it pitches early in the count. It's just, he's not far away. Elliot Ramos was the same way just a year ago, 2 years ago. You can clearly see that, you know, the athleticism and all of that tease that we got from him is legitimate. It kind of reminds me of Jonathan Kuminga. You know, Jonathan Kuminga was so sped up early on in the first couple of years of his career, and then getting reps, you know, he was able to slow things down and be the Jonathan Kuminga we witnessed at the end of, or towards the middle in the latter part of last season. But I think Matos is close. He just needs to get reps, and it's going to happen at the minor league system. Now, you couldn't opt out Yastrzemski simply because he's out of options. So I think the thinking was there, look, he's not far away, but we need him to work on one thing, and that's his approach at the plate, and go down and do that consistently in Sacramento. But I think the bigger story is that the bigger storyline there is that, yeah, it's Farhan saying that I've run out of time. And that I cannot afford Matos to learn on my dime because I've got to win yesterday.
And yesterday they did win because of their veteran players. Wilmer Flores hit 2 homers following his grand slam from 2 days ago down in the desert. You have Michael Conforto, who had his first home run back off the IL. Looked, I think, a little overmatched his first few games. I think it was 1 for 12 going into that at bat. Turns around a fastball, hits the go-ahead home run. The Giants win 5-2 and take game 1 of the series against Texas. All that as well. But when you talk about Farhan and making a choice like sending Luis Matos down, the only issue that I have with it is it doesn't feel like a move that has any sort of, I guess, understanding of the human side of the game. Like, to me, it is a cold, hard, calculated move where basically these players are being told by the actions of Farhan Zaidi, in this case Luis Matos, that they're just a piece. Like that they're just a statistic, that they are just a number on his spreadsheet that is going to be interchangeably moved up and down no matter what your performance, no matter how you're feeling. And I don't know if the kid is crushed. I don't know if he's feeling like, okay, this is a great opportunity for me to go back down and work on what I got to do and I got to embrace this. I'm not sure how Luis Matos is feeling. But when I see that kind of move for a player like Austin Slater, nonetheless, who comes back and like, he's still hitting 140. I know he's been with the team for 9 years. I don't think he's a horrible baseball player, but I don't think he's somebody that should stand in the way of a Luis Matos, because I think that's a player that if you can work with the growing pains, and you're working with the growing pains of Austin Slater anyways, Matos has the ability to help you win down the line, or even in just a couple of weeks if he finds a stroke at the plate, because I think what he gives you defensively is an asset in center field. I think it also makes it a little more difficult now for Bob Melvin to manage the moving parts in center field, because some days you're going to have Slater out there. Some days you're going to have to move Yaz into center field. Where does that leave Matos? Conforto, is Soler going to be the DH? And once Lamont comes back, is that means Flores is relegated to the bench? Like, there's all these kind of moving parts for the Giants right now, and a lot of them are stagnant. So I guess I would like to see Farhan Zaidi or this front office, who I believe is the one, honestly, that makes the lineup card most days. I would like to see them start looking at these players not just as chess pieces, but also as people. Because when you send down Matos after just a couple of weeks of bad baseball, I think it can also signal to the rest of the team that, okay, as long as you're productive, well, then there's a place for you. But if you're going to struggle for a couple of weeks, which is inevitably going to happen in the game of baseball, well, then we're going to have to make quick and drastic choices. And that's something that I don't necessarily like to see, because I don't think it demonstrates a level of trust that's requisite or that you need in order to play winning baseball.
Well, I think it's welcome to, you know, professional sports, sort of. That's the way I read it. I think that it depends. I think it goes from player to player. Would the same hold true if Elliot Ramos was to go in the tank? I don't know if that's necessarily true, because his body of work is a little bit, we've seen a little bit more of it. It's been a little bit more consistent.
I think the choice was between those two. Like, if Matos was hitting the way that Ramos is and vice versa, I think Ramos would have been sent down. I think it was just a numbers game, and one of those two guys was going to be the odd man out.
But when you say sent down, it's not as though we're not going to see him again. He needed work. So partially I'm with you, and I don't typically say this in terms of my quote-unquote takes, but I can go either way. If the guys that I defer to, meaning that hitting instructors, meaning that Bob Melvin, the people have been around this sport forever, and rest assured, it's not Farhan making this decision exclusively on his, you know, on his own behalf, but he's consulting with others. And if they feel as though this guy needs to go down and work on X, Y, and Z, and we know exactly what it is that he needs to do, let's send him down to Sacramento so that he can get the work consistently. I want this guy getting four bats a game and playing against consistent pitching every single night so that he can work on exactly what it is that we've instructed him to do. And if that's the case, then we'll see him back up here. I don't think it's an indictment on his career. I mean, it's not as though you're not going to see Luis Matos again. I think that there was a sense of, look, the guy hadn't had an extra base hit in over 3 weeks. He was clearly in an epic slump. And so for a team that's trying to tread water and make a run at a wild card or be respectable this year, they felt as though it's time to send him down. We're going to yo-yo this kid. It might be a blow to his confidence, but hey, welcome to professional baseball, especially on a competing baseball team. So I think that's the way I read it. And I think there's just, not that Slater's much more of an upgrade, I hear you, but there is a sense of confidence in that he knows, at least the moment isn't too big for somebody like Davin Austin Slater or a Mike Yastrzemski, as much as they might struggle. And when you look at the numbers, Matos might have better numbers in terms of strikeout and right across the board. And but I think that at the end of the day, there's just a sense of confidence that if I get into a late inning game and I have Austin Slater at the plate as opposed to Luis Matos, a struggling Luis Matos, I'm a little more comfortable that Slater knows what to do in that instance.
Well, I do agree with that. Like, at some point you need, I guess, I don't know, a fourth outfielder or an option to come off the bench and in particularly face lefties. Like, Yaz is eventually going to come up late in games, and you're going to need somebody to pinch hit for him that can actually get a base hit off a southpaw. That's going to be necessary. And that, to me, is Austin Slater's role at this point. I guess I'm just a little frustrated also, Dan, with, I think when Luis Matos took a turn for the worse was around the time that they moved him to the leadoff spot. And I don't think he particularly profiles right now as a leadoff hitter because of what you talked about, his play discipline. He's a little all over the place. Being able to hit every pitch sometimes is a blessing as well as a curse, because if you can hit anything and you can get to any ball, well, that also means you're less incentivized to take a ball. It also means you're less incentivized to take a walk. And that's something Luis Matos right now cannot do. He doesn't strike out a ton. He also doesn't walk. That to me is not a leadoff hitter. That's a player that I think should be hitting five or lower. And that's also where he was most successful, when he was turning around pitches, when he was winning NL Players of the Week. That's when Luis Matos was at his best. So in a way, I'm not saying they set him up for failure, but when Jung-Hoo Lee went down, I just felt like it was an open season for the leadoff spot. Anybody that's hot can go hit leadoff, especially if Lamont Wade is hurt. We got to figure out a two-hole. That means that Jorge Soler, for crying out loud, was hitting leadoff in a couple games for the Giants. That shouldn't happen either. But when Luis Matos moved to the leadoff spot, that's when he started to slump, because I just don't think he was set up to be successful the way he is currently. So, yes, there are things he needs to work on, and maybe that's where he's going in Sacramento, and they want him to be more patient at the plate. They want him to, I don't know, draw deeper at-bats, to have more quality, lengthy at-bats, because they need him eventually as a leadoff guy. But I just feel like in addition to them pulling the rug from out under him, he was only struggling in that position because they put him there. And that, again, is a move, to me, by Farhan that is a little more just calculated and not understanding of what you actually have.
Well, I don't know, again, if it's just exclusively Farhan. When it comes to a lineup, I mean, Bob Melvin has some culpability in this at all, as well.
Sure, but I also think, I mean, I think nowadays most general managers are like...
No, that's true.
Like Aaron Boone doesn't make the lineup in New York.
Yeah, that's true. But I think that when it comes to Luis Matos, I think just he's better served getting his confidence back at the minor league system. And we'll see him again. I like to think of this as just being a temporary stint. And while, yeah, it's a blow, certainly when you think about where he was at just 2 weeks ago. But the bigger picture here is just the construction of a young athlete, whether it's football, baseball, or basketball. That's what we're thinking long term here. We're thinking about this guy potentially being a corner outfielder on your team for years to come. So while we live in the here and now, I think that the Giants have to think about this guy long term and think about Luis Matos, not necessarily against the Texas Rangers in a weekend series, but where is Luis Matos going to be a month from now? Or where is he going to be a year from now? Because he is a guy that I think you can clearly see that with the athleticism and with that brief glimpse that he showed everybody that he can carry a baseball team. And so with that, you just want to make sure that what it is that you're doing right now pays dividends. And sometimes you have to nurture these guys. It could be a little bit frustrating, but you can't expedite the process, I guess is what I'm saying. And there'll be, you know, I understand if you were to take the temperature of the fan base and people here at 95.7 The Game, it's like, I don't want to see Austin Slade. I want to see Luis Matos. But again, I think that their perspective might be a little bit different in terms of this being sort of a longer-term play.
This is Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. That's Dan DeVoe. My name is Evan Giddings, Carter Chickering behind the glass, rocking with you on a Saturday from 9 to noon, talking about the San Francisco Giants right now. Won 5-2 yesterday against Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers. I know they didn't have Seager. They're a little bit banged up as well, and they've been, I think, hovering below 500 for much of this season also. But it was interesting watching and seeing Bob Melvin on the Giants side, Bruce Bochy on the Rangers side. Because I don't know about you, Dan. I always viewed them as similar managers. Like Bruce Bochy is undoubtedly a and will always be measured as a better manager than Bob Melvin. He's one of few that has 4 World Series rings. He is a master of his craft. But in a way, I feel like maybe it's just seeing them together, former catchers, former backups, longtime big leaguers, have been in the game for 40 years. I do feel like there's a similar disposition about them, and kind of watching the game yesterday, the way that they were, I don't know, maneuvering, having to use Bob Melvin less so, but their bullpen, I don't know, it just kind of got me thinking about where the Giants used to be with Bochy and why Melvin's in the saddle right now. It feels like I don't know if they're trying to tap into that a little more, but there is something about the old school manager that maybe just because of Kapler being here the last couple of years, I do feel like this town and personally my own life for watching baseball has just been missing.
I agree with you. You know, the one thing about Bob Melvin, and I know you're a Bob Melvin fan because going back to your days with the Oakland A's. And
I think he's better than people give him credit for.
Yeah, no, he is. He's a good manager. I just never get the guy. Like, I can understand Boch. He's lovable. Gabe Kapler was divisive. I was a Gabe Kapler guy. I liked Gabe Kapler.
By the way, have you seen him on TikTok?
No.
Gabe Kapler is a TikTok star now.
Oh, no. Oh,
his last video was him. What was it, Carter? He was just putting on a tuxedo. It was him just basically dressing up with a bow tie and all black, you know, with the Gabe Kapler smolder with that finely cut beard, looking like a model heading out to his assistant general manager job. There is not a man who is more built for Miami than Gabe Kapler.
Is that where he is?
Yeah.
Oh,
at the Marlins.
Oh, no. Well, listen, but Gabe Kapler is who he is. Love him or hate him. He's a musician. The guy is like, I would see him at the farmer's market. One of the reasons why I tried to recruit him to come swim in the bay. But
you guys both go to the Dolphin Club?
No, he wouldn't do it. But I appreciate someone who's that's who he is, and he's always been divisive. There were people, the minute he walked into the room, were like, dude, I am out on this guy. Are you kidding me? This is San Francisco. Where's Boach and the Ponch, you know, and a middle-aged man that was just lovable. Now we got this guy who's having middle-life crisis, you know, driving a Corvette with the top down with less than 8% body fat, and like, what are you trying to do here? But he was who he was. The thing with Bob Melvin, which I've never understood, just from a personal standpoint, like, dude, you know, like, who the hell are you? You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of James Bond, like that old joke with James Bond. Like, James Bond, you're...
Like Sean Connery?
No, not necessarily the specific actor, but just James Bond. You're a man of intrigue, an international spy. You're surrounded by beautiful women and fast cars. Could you smile? I mean, when's the last time you saw James Bond just crack a smile? My thing with Bob Melvin is like, brother, I can't tell you the last time I saw the guy smile. I mean, I've never been able to get my arms around that dude.
Yeah, it's probably, I want to say Daniel Craig is smiled probably one time in five James Bond movies. Timothy Dalton was a little more of a smiler. Pierce Brosnan would always, you could see some teeth every once in a while. I mean, for crying out loud, he had Halle Berry in one of the movies.
Roger Moore smiled too much.
He was the original, right?
Moore was the original.
Sean Connery was the original.
Really?
He was the first Bond Sean Connery was.
Are we sure about that?
I'm going to look that up.
Bet every last penny I have on that.
All right, we got to do some research in the break. These are the hard facts that we need to uncover here on Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. Evan
like
Giddens and Dan DeVoe.
$34.62 in his bank account.
Yeah, we're going to get back into Dan's comp for James Bond on the other side. There's also something that's been leaking out, I think, slowly from 49ers minicamp in regards to Brandon Ayuk that I find fascinating. We haven't had a chance also to discuss Christian McCaffrey's record-setting deal, what that might do for the running back market, what that might do for the 49ers. And then finally, there's also some Warriors updates. There was a report earlier this week about Klay Thompson that for some fans might be good, for others might be emotionally a little bit hard to handle. So we're going to get into all of that as we continue on here on 95.7 The Game. Evan Giddings and Dan DeVoe, hit that phone line, 888-957-9570 is the number one with you until noon here on 95.7 The Game.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
Well, we've gotten to the bottom of it. Carter was right. I don't know what we bet him, Dan, but Sean Connery is the original James Bond.
Oh, don't mess with Stuart Hall and that education, man. King Kong Carter comes strong, brother.
Dude, where is Stuart Hall? I feel like
it's right in the middle.
It's like the size of the
Pacific
studio.
Heights. Well, there's Stuart Hall Grammar School and there's the Stuart Hall High School. He could tell you much more. He went to Stuart
Hall.
Were
you K-12, Carter?
No. Too much.
No. Too much? Just high school?
Yeah, Pine and Octavia.
Okay. Oh, actually, I used to take Pine home every single day and I lived in the
Yeah, so it's right there,
sunset.
As a matter of fact, right in the middle of the city. Stuart Hall, so you would play like, I want to say Lick Wilmerdink, maybe University High.
You played Lick.
Correct.
Yeah. And who's like the perennial powerhouse in that division?
University's been...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Really University's good been good.
Time. We were kind of the fighters with University for a long time. Looks great.
Well, and you and I are Catholic school kids, so.
You know, I guarantee you, I feel very comfortable saying this, that there is nobody from University or Lick Wilmerdink that are listening to this show right now. Like, those people, are, I'm telling you right now.
Oh,
like,
a couple of Carter's friends.
Honey, jump on board the yacht. We're like, they're traveling for the summer, man. They're like,
those are the people you roll with, Dan. What are you talking
about?
No,
man, I don't hang with people like that, man. I'm all about the real people.
Who else owns spaceships in this city?
No, I'm just telling you, man, that I'm about the real San Franciscans, right? Hanging out at the former Pat O'Shea's.
The Dolphin Club.
Getting one down at the bus stop. Yeah, go down to, have a little swim. But I'm telling you, University, Lick Wilmerdink, they're up at 9 o'clock in the morning listening to Sports Talk Radio. Now they got better things to do.
And
they're packing the kids. They're going out to wine country and doing their thing, man. I just indicted an entire university. Prove me wrong, University. I want to hear one person that went to University of Iowa to call in and send me a text message because you know you don't exist.
I will say, any place that calls themselves university, high school.
That's right.
Those are two separate things. Those are two separate levels of education. It does indicate a little bit about you.
There's a little bit of arrogance behind all of it.
Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone, Saturdays here on 95.7 The Game. I promise we're going to get this back to sports talk in a moment. Oh, shout out to the 415. I went to university and I am listening.
I need some proof. Who was your history teacher and you got 5 seconds to text me back?
It does seem like a school that you would call the teacher by their first name. Like it's one of those schools. Like,
well,
you have an actual
much more
friendly
intimate
relationship.
Yeah, I mean, the classes.
Like, we're going to piss off half the city
by
the end of this show.
But there's an intimacy there because there's only a few people. First of all, it's expensive, and also it's difficult to get into. So the class,
some of those 4-to-1 student to teacher ratios,
yeah, which is the way you want to do things.
Do they call them professors because it's a university?
No.
Oh,
no. These are just, it'd be a little bit odd, but wouldn't it? Like, excuse me, Mark. I've got a question. Calling a teacher by their first name.
Oh, we got a couple. Yeah, we got Lick Wilmerding in the house. Apparently, they whooped on Stuart Hall. Shout out to the 415. Shout out Liz Brown from Stuart Hall, also for the 415. And we actually have our first call of the day, Dan. Zach in San Francisco wants to talk about this very subject, the private schools in the city of San Francisco. Zach, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I went to Lick Wilmerding, man. Graduated in 82.
Oh, attaboy. A real one.
When it was one building, and when my class had like 19 people.
And Lick Wilmerding is located where? You're sort of like, I want to say,
it's like Glen Park?
Downtown, outskirts downtown.
Way down.
No, we're on Ocean, right across the street from City Hall, City College.
Oh, yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
Yeah, it was cool though.
Yeah, okay. I got some knowledge.
Yeah, right down the street from Reardon. Yep.
Okay, so if you were back in the day and you were hanging out on Ocean, do you have any knowledge of Beeps Burgers? Are you familiar with Beeps?
Man, I just went there the other night.
Oh my God.
I still live in the city.
Yes, come on, Danny. I'm going to give you a big old hug, my man. Keep going. What do you got?
No, I'm just commenting on the schools, man. Yeah, we used to play University. University was kind of like our main competitor in our division, but yeah, we had good times back then.
Yeah, I'm surprised that University is sort of the powerhouse. I would think Stuart Hall, in honesty, Carter, would be sort of a little bit better than University. Am I not mistaken by saying that University's, their enrollments got to be a little bit smaller than the other schools?
Probably.
I think they're all kind of relatively the same.
Well, apparently
size.
This guy went to a high school with one building, so I imagine you can't fit one, you know, too many people in there. I had a couple of friends that went to Lick. See, this is the thing, and man, I'm just gaining knowledge at this point because I'm in the deep end right now. I don't know much about San Francisco high school culture. I can tell you a lot about the East Bay, but SF, see, once we get across the bridge, dude, it's foreign territory out here.
Yeah, well, I'm the same way. It just don't put me in a bridge and tunnel because I have no idea where the hell I am.
Well, you live over by the tunnel tops.
Wow, that's good knowledge.
Shout out to the Presidio.
Wow, have you been up there?
Yeah, man.
Oh, my God.
It's like one of the best date spots, I got to say.
Oh, okay. Obviously. Yeah.
By the way, you would have been... I promise we're going to get back to sports in a moment.
No more... I don't want to hear about your date spots.
No, but I was going to say you would be proud of me this week.
Playing the love songs. And
I went swimming in the Pacific Ocean three times this week. You would be proud of me.
So the Pacific Ocean where? Were you in Southern California?
No, I was at Ocean Beach.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I went down to Pacifica a couple times.
Okay.
I was hot this week. I know you're in New York and
that's a real
you're
deal.
Off staring
that's
over the top
deal.
Of Central Park
when
and whatnot.
When you say swim, you went for a plunge, ankle deep. What were you doing
exactly? Full head in. Yeah, plunge.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's not as though you were swimming for an extended period of time.
Well, no, because you got to be worried about the rip tides and strong currents and whatnot. It's probably easier to swim over on this side down by the marina, right? Over here in the bay.
Well, yeah, or the cove. I don't know why you want to go out to Pacifica and deal with any of that when I'm inviting you down to the cove where you can just swim and it's basically...
You invite me a lot of places and I don't know if it's just that I don't follow up on them or that it's just kind of a one-off, but...
We will get out and do something with where I can show off my athletic prowess just to sort of end all of this. And you'll understand why I don't show up at these company events because it's just no fun. So they go, well, Dan's here and he's going to rip one over everybody's head. And I'm like, what fun is this? You want the guy who's going to like dribble one of the third base and we all laugh and, look at the chubby guy, trip over himself and let's have a beer. Like, that's not me. I lace him up and I play for real. And I'm just not fun to play with in any sport.
You're the guy that shows up to a softball company game in metal spikes. Like he's the modern day Ty Cobb.
Softball guy.
He's just sitting there on the side with
eye black.
Shout out to him, Lovin.
Sharpening his spikes, ready to go in foot first.
Softball guy.
That's how you break up a double
Three
play.
Bags.
Honestly, though, we did miss you out there on Friday. Carter was there representing.
How's Carter?
Well, you didn't stick around for BP, Carter, or for the actual game, I should say.
Yeah, I had to go to a birthday party. I had to leave early, so.
Yeah. He's actually popular, so.
I think Carter.
Stuart Hall kid.
Is one of those guys that, by the way, King Kong Carter goes at 6'8", 300 pounds, and played collegiate basketball. So I think he's one of those guys that he's probably the quietest guy in the room, but if he stepped to the plate, he'd be like, holy crap, this dude's got it together. Either that or he's a complete wimp. I don't know. Hopefully it's not the latter.
I
got some game, right?
Power forward?
I got some game.
No, he played collegiately. Shout out to Endicott.
Endicott? Yeah. Attaboy.
Oh, yeah. Little basketball.
Attaboy. So what we got? Well, actually, in that case, we have two collegiate athletes here.
D3 have.
Yep. Who's the odd man out? D'Anthony Volpe. Well, I do love that name, I got to say.
All right. Man.
But no, I'm just kidding.
But no, I didn't play. Oh. Intramurals, brother.
No, well, according to Steiny, you had some mean game on the streets.
Yeah, so I heard that, and you kept building me up, and I hadn't
seen... Well, he was building you up.
Well, yeah, I kept hearing through third parties that, here you got game. Steiny says you got game. And so the first time, because I hadn't done a show or seen Steiny, and we were here doing a show. We were in the
crossover, yeah.
The crossover. And so somebody brought it up. I'm like, oh, Dan's here. You play with Dan. How is Dan? He's like, and he completely qualified it and said, yeah, he was a nice little player. Like, what?
That might be the biggest sign of respect for Matt Steinmetz around. So nice little player.
Nice little player.
He also called Steph Curry a nice little player. So should take that as a sign of respect. Who has the ultimate sign of respect, Dan? We were talking about him before we got into the James Bond comparisons and all the rest about San Francisco public and private, I should say, high schools. It's Bruce Bochy. He's got the respect of everybody in this town. And I'm just curious, like, when I say Bruce Bochy, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah, I think respect. I think it's rapport. I think it's not that he's a tactician. It's just that he hits that sweet spot. Now, obviously, this is more than one word, but he's one of those guys that I think his success, and I think the success of the majority of coaches these days, is that can today's player respect you? And that's, do they want to play for you? Can you create and cultivate the proper energy and the proper culture within a franchise and or a team? And no one did it better than him. He was just someone that you enjoyed playing for. And at the end of the day, when you're talking about today's athlete in 2024, that's being a good coach in my estimation. And he did that as well as anybody.
Yeah, I think For me, the managerial spot in baseball, it might be the most important or influential of all the big, you know, head coaches or kind of the decision makers in the major American sports. I guess I can't speak so much to soccer because I don't have that kind of knowledge. But a manager in baseball pushes so many buttons throughout a game that I think if you're a bad one, it's a little easier to cover up if you're a bad coach in other sports. Like eventually you're going to get found out and exposed. But if you're a bad coach on a great team, like for example, in the NBA Finals, I don't think Joe Mazzulla is a great coach. He coaches a great team and I think they're going to win the NBA Finals. But I don't think Joe Mazzulla is a top half of the league coach. If you're a top half of the league manager, I do think you can have more influence. Or if you're a bottom half of the league manager, you can also hurt your team a little more than, say, in a sport like basketball. So I think with Bochy, he's always been, I think he's been the same guy he's been in San Francisco as he was in San Diego before he got to the Giants. And I just think he's steady, man. Like when I think of Bruce Bochy, I think of a steady, obviously, you know, imposing
large
presence. What do
you think his biggest strength is?
His biggest strength is his ability to figure out when to use his gut and when to use the numbers. Like that's a needle that not many men, yeah, in my opinion, can thread. Because when you have somebody that understands, say, we'll just use analytics as a broad term, but understands, okay, how to put players in successful positions, and we do it in baseball a lot with statistics, you understand what players operate in certain spots. But you also have to have a guttural feeling for a situation. Like, I don't think it's a gut check move for Bruce Bochy to go to Javier Lopez against Bryce Harper because he knows left on left, that guy gets anybody out any time of day. But it is a gut check move to say, to leave Javi Lopez in after Harper, knowing that Adam LaRoche is two men down the line and we got to get him out. But before we get to him, I have to trust my guy to go get two righties out. That to me is where the gut feeling for Bochy is different than just about any manager left standing in the game today. Being able to differentiate those situations, I think, is impossible. Like, that's what separates him in my mind. So as far as his biggest strength, I think it's feel, honestly. Feel is Bochy's biggest strength.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although that feel sort of departed him in the playoffs against the Chicago Cubs. I think he got too much into the numbers there. But that's a lost art. I always talk about this, that when you go out to the mound and you're going to make a pitching change, don't simply have it based on a pitch count or have it framed that it's set up for my setup guy and then I can get it to the ninth inning, give it to Camilo Duvall. Just go out there. If it's Logan Webb a couple of weeks back, and I'm referring to Bob Melvin. Mm. And I think one of a manager's duties is to go out and look into the guy's eyes, man, and just see if he's got any bulldog left in him, or just have that conversation and assess the decision at that point. A lot of these things are premeditated. As a manager, It's human interaction at the end of the day. Somebody said authenticity when it comes to Bruce Bochy. That's a great word. Bruce Bochy was authentic. And a lot of that, I think, lends itself to what it is that I'm saying, that part of the lost art is the interpersonal sort of relationship that they have. And to take it a step further, as far as your lineup card or making decisions and switches throughout the course of the game, don't always have to be dictated by a template or by a tablet or by, quote unquote, the numbers.
No, but I also think that's why someone like Bochy can work in a place like Texas and Bob Melvin couldn't work in a place like San Diego. And I do wonder sometimes with the decisions we've talked about as far as Matos getting optioned, you know, the lineup being constantly rearranged. Some of that is because of a lack of productivity and Melvin searching for answers. I also think it's because of the way that baseball is kind of managed from above now. Like, it's not just so, like, the manager is not the only person that writes the lineup card or is not the person who decides every spot 1 through 9. He might be given parameters to operate within with. Like, I've seen certain managers that have, okay, this guy can only hit 1 through 3, or this guy is only allowed to hit in the bottom 4 spots in the order. So then it's up to the manager to choose where he's hitting 6 through 9, but it does, if he wants to hit him leadoff, like, he can't do that. And so I think there is, and I've seen a little tug and pull between, say, Melvin and what I believe to be Farhan trying to put his fingerprints on this team. And some of it's because of injury. Some of it's because the veterans haven't played very well. But I guess when I think of Bruce Bochy, I think of someone that has just a, I don't know, like an unequivocal respect from the top down that he is going to be the one in charge of his team. Like, when I think of the Texas Rangers and I think of the decisions that are made as far as the lineup, the situations, the staff, the rotation, the bullpen, all of that to me screams Bruce Bochy. Sometimes when I see the Giants play, and I think it's a little bit of the residue that was left from the last couple of seasons, but it does still feel like Farhan's team to an extent. And Bob Melvin is just kind of sprinkling in his flair on top. I don't know if you read it that way.
I think that's a good assessment. I think that what this boils down to is that there is still, as much as we try and change it, especially when it comes to baseball with the sabermetrics and the analytics, that this is still about people, right? There's the human element. As much as we try and squash it in every professional sport, I'll take it a step further. The Angel Hernandez sign off. I wasn't down with that. I wasn't down with that at all. I know that Angel Hernandez was not good, but there are a lot of people that I respect. And I guess what I'm trying to say here with this connective tissue is that, look, unless you want to replace that human element by having robotic umpires, we'll go for it. But you lose a lot, I think. But the Angel Hernandez, and I know that I'm sort of switching gears here, but I'm not into dancing on someone's grave. And there were a lot of people that I respected. Rich Eisen, I heard him go off an entire segment on his show about he's so glad that the worst umpire in the history of the sport was gone.
Wow, dude.
I don't know. That bothers me. I think that a lot of it was just because it went viral and it became an entity, that a lot of it just got blown out of proportion when he made a mistake, which every umpire does. It was something that we sort of gravitated to and magnified simply because it was Angel Hernandez. I know this has nothing to do with Bruce Bochy, but I'm just telling you I don't know. I think all of us should feel a little ashamed because we're, especially in the media, if you're a fan, go for it, man. That's what, you know, fan, I always remind people, is an acronym for the word fanatic. You're not logical people. Go nuts. You suck. Get the hell out of here. Yeah, no, seriously. That's what fans should never change. But in terms of the media, we're too much into ripping people down. Like, that's, we don't have to live there. We don't have to simply dance on the dude's grave and ride him out to an early retirement and he's gone. Like, this idea of trying to tear people down from a media standpoint, I'm not down with it, man. And there was a lot of that this past week with Angel Hernandez.
Well, a week ago, I was getting ready to rip Anthony Volpe, but he wouldn't let me do it. I mean, he played too well in that series, so I got to give him his respect.
Anthony? Oh, no. There's somebody else out from the East Coast that it may work its way in today's conversation that I am telling you has ties to my old man who's from Newark, New Jersey. Jersey Ken's not here. And it's St. Benedict High School, where my old man went to.
Put some respect on it.
Do you know who went to St. Benedict and coached there for nearly 10 years?
Is that Dan Hurley?
Danny Hurley, ladies and gentlemen. God. And he better not go to them damn Lakers.
Oh, we will get to him. In fact, I might rip him by the time. Actually, I'm not going to rip him. Well, I do have a local angle.
I dare you to even go there.
I have a local angle I get into.
You go there.
I love Dan Hurley. I can't lie, but I will rip him. Maybe in the 10 o'clock hour, maybe the 11 o'clock hour. It depends. We do have some basketball stuff I want to run by you, Dan. We also got some Niners news that I think is interesting that's leaked out from the first week of minicamp. Who's there? Who's not? Who's been getting paid? Who wants to get paid, and just where the 49ers find themselves at this point in the summer. But in regards to, you know, the conversation, now you're talking about like ripping people down. I generally don't believe that that's like kicking a guy when he's on his way out, to me, is just unfair. But I will say that if the one thing that comes to your mind, if it's an athlete, if it's an umpire, if it's negative, that's how you're going to be remembered. Like, for example, the umpire that I will always remember is Eric Gregg.
Eric Gregg.
Because of the 1997 NLCS, it was a game 7 between the Braves and
what
the Marlins.
Fat umpires.
LeVon Hernandez struck out 14 batters. Not one of those strikeouts was a strike. Like, the man punched out Fred McGriff, or maybe I forget who it was who was on the Marlins. He punched out the final batter of the game. The ball was in the other batter's box.
Cabrera.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? So I will always remember him for having a terrible strike zone and arguably the biggest game of those players' young careers. Angel Hernandez, you're going to have to live with it. I don't know about the worst umpire in the history of baseball. I think that social media and video footage is probably going to be not on his side in this case if you took it to court. But come on. I mean, or some. I'm sure somebody in the 1920s was blind and they let him call balls and strikes.
Listen, he called a lot of All-Star games and NLCS and ALCS and
I can't
World
believe I'm
Series.
Defending Angel Hernandez.
Well, no, because he was bad. But the way you measure it is because we're talking about the sabermetrics and all the measuring devices they have in place. Well, they also do that for umpires. And so when you go off of that, he was always in the lower percentile from his peers, right? So that's what you have to pay attention to. I don't listen to, you know, the fan who suddenly is gravitating to every bad call of Angel Hernandez. The bigger story, I guess, is what I'm getting at, is that right after that, I saw before the NBA Finals started, and I'm watching ESPN, and Greenberg is doing his show, and he's saying right from the rundown and story number one that Jason Tatum not only has to win the NBA Finals, he's got to be the MVP. Like, we're already ready to tear down the Boston Celtics. Like, that narrative, like, it's almost as though we want them to fall short so I can tell everybody I told you so. He was soft, and it feeds into what is sort of the temperature for sports media these days, that we want our stars, whether we're willing to admit it or not, we want them to stumble, maybe because it makes us feel good in our little world. I'm not exactly sure the origin of it, but I do know it's real.
I don't know!
The funniest sports take that I saw going into the NBA Finals was that, and it was kind of a dig at Boston, like the city, was that if the Mavericks win the finals, that they're going to retire Luka Doncic's jersey at the Garden. Because he's the closest thing to Bird.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
No, I think there are a couple things, though, from that game, or I guess from the series, from the overall playoffs that the Warriors can take away. And we can get into that in just a little bit. In regards to, like, propping up and tearing people down, I don't know why people choose certain athletes. Like, there aren't many athletes that I hate. I'm not even sure there's any that I can name off the top of my head. Like, for a while, it was this guy, Alexander Zverev, who's playing tomorrow in the French Open final against Alcaraz, because he was involved in, you know, like a, you know, domestic violence case. Those are players that I don't want to root for. But I mean, like, if you do something on the field or on the court, whatever your respective playing surface is, I don't know if I can necessarily hate you. Like, I don't want someone to fail. In this case, for the NBA Finals or the Stanley Cup Finals or eventually for the World Series. And I just want to see things unfold because I think that sports are the one story that no one knows where they're going. Everyone thinks they do. Like, I think that Boston's going to win the finals, but there'll be something throughout this series that shocks you or surprises you. And that is going to tell us what the narrative or what the, I don't know, overall story of this player is going to be.
Well, let me give you another example. There is Shohei Ohtani. No one's bigger in baseball, maybe in professional sports, than Shohei, especially right after.
He's the most unique baseball player.
The ink hadn't even dried on that $70 million a year contract. And almost like within a month, a couple of weeks after that news, it leaked out that his translator was this degenerate gambler who was illegally gambling and pilfering money from his bank account. How many of us immediately, without any level of proof, were saying Shohei's got to be involved? Shohei Ohtani has got to be involved in terms of gambling. Oh my God, Shohei Ohtani is a degenerate. He's got a gambling addiction.
Don't talk to Carter about that.
Oh, sorry, my man. But people would immediately rush there. Why? Because, oh my God, we've got Shohei. We're going to tear him down. This is beautiful. Maybe, you know, part of it, Ev, what it could be is that we're so content hungry these days. Mm. Whether it's shows like this or whether it's podcasts or trying to fill 4 hours, that wasn't the case just a couple of years ago. But we need so much content because we're talking sports 24/7 that, oh my God, we got a story. Shohei Ohtani, did you hear this? Don't forget to join us coming up tonight when I do my show from my bedroom. I'm going to talk about Shohei Ohtani. He's a gambling fool. I mean, I don't know what's driving it. There's multiple forces here, but I do know, again, that it's a real entity that we want to see our stars, whether we love them or hate them, if we feel there's a story there, like Jason Tatum falling short, there's a lot of people out there going, God, I hope he sucks. And he wasn't very good in game one, so that I can continue to rip the guy. That's just where a lot of people live. And I think Angel Hernandez was part of that. Now, Angel Hernandez was bad, don't get me wrong, but it fed sort of a larger beast.
Yeah, I don't know if Shohei Ohtani was involved. I do wholeheartedly believe that he knew his boy had a gambling problem. There's some just...
Oh, you might be right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
$16 million is a lot of money.
something, you better be careful.
That's like Bruno Mars money.
But the bigger issue is that a lot of people wanted to take it a step further, and it was that he was gambling. And I know a lot of people had a rush to judgment before he came out and publicly said, I had nothing to do with this. That interim, whether it was a week, people were running with it.
Yeah, and I think it's also one of the reasons why, for example, people wanted to compare immediately Anthony Edwards to Michael Jordan. I mean, you're looking for, I don't know, the most extreme comp or conclusion possible. But Dan was talking about content, the need for content. We got it coming your way for the next 2 hours up until noon. Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. My name is Evan Giddings. That's Dan Devone. 888-957-9570 is the number. Also on YouTube and Twitch, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Can check us out there. And we are going to come back. I want to get into the San Francisco 49ers, though, because there was something that yesterday and really over the last couple of days has been catching my eye. And I feel like is flown a little bit under the radar in regards to Brandon Ayuk, because there hasn't been too many new angles of this story. But I think we were provided one less than 24 hours ago, Dan, that caught my eye and I think is very interesting in regards to the leverage or the battle in negotiations between the 49ers and their number one wide receiver. So let's get into that on the other side
as
we continue on.
Can I also tell you something else when it comes to the 49ers?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I put this to Stuart Hall Carter or King Kong Carter last week or a couple of weeks back, and I think this is the bigger issue. Who would you rather be dating? Would you rather be dating Miss Universe, Olivia Culpo, like that of Christian McCaffrey, or do you want to be Paul Skeens dating Olivia Dunn? That's all I want to know.
I'll tell you on the other side.
All right.
On 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.